Our guest today comes from a family with generations of military service. As a deputy director at the George W. Bush Institute, he's helping lead a bold new strategy to connect economic opportunity, education, and health and well-being for our veterans and their families. Today, we're tackling the hard question around financial securities, mental wellness, and what it really means to take care of those who served.
Welcome to Your Next Mission, the nation's number one video podcast on military transition and leadership. We tell the stories of those who served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition and financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now, here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Thanks for joining us today. Before we get started, I'd like to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback, and USAA, where we take care of our own. With additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision, together they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and family. I say it every week. We love them too. Now I'm excited to introduce today's guest, Dewan Welcher, Deputy Director at the George W. Bush Institute, a 14-year Navy veteran and a leader who spent his career making sure veterans and their families have what they need to thrive. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm very glad to be here with you today, Sergeant Major.
Well, no sweat. I'm very, because you've been harassing me just a little bit. I really want to make sure this show goes good and we have a good discussion because I appreciate what you're doing. But hey, before we get started, would you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. And I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to do so. I am from Gary, Indiana. Some of you might have become more familiar with Gary because of the new Michael film that just came out recently. But first generation college student off to Indiana University, sight unseen. The first time I had saw the university or the campus was the day I was moving in. And it was incredible. My thought was that I wanted to go to college because I did not want to go into the military as many folks in my family had done before me. I'm the oldest male in my family. My father has three sons. I'm the oldest. My two younger brothers had gone on to serve, one in the Army and one in the Air Force. My father served in the Air Force. My grandfather served in the Army. My uncle served in the Army. So I come from generations of service. And with all of that, I knew that I wanted to try to find, or at least I felt that I wanted to try to find a different path for myself. And college was the way that I thought was best for me to do that. It was around 2009 or so. And for those of you who were listening and know what the economic conditions were around that time, it was a little tough for graduating seniors, college seniors, to try to find their way. And as luck would have it, I had a college friend who recommended I take a look at being a Navy officer. And at this time, that had never crossed my mind. I'm so grateful having done that because I went to the recruiting office. I was selected and off to OCS I went. That's Officer Candidate School for the Uninitiated. After I went to OCS, I took my first tour of duty out in Japan, Yokosuka, Japan. Fast forward, after a few deployments and a few other ships, I found my way transitioning off active duty in the city of Chicago. After I decided to transition from active duty, I still stayed in the reserves. I served my community with an organization called the Travis Manion Foundation, and I was the inaugural director there for the city of Chicago and the region of the Midwest. Doing that work for about 4 years' time and the community, I was recognized as a VLP scholar, which I think that we'll talk about later in the podcast. And off to the races. After the Bush Institute fellowship, off to grad school to get my MBA from UC Berkeley, Haas School of Business. And I got a phone call to come back with the question of would I be interested in competing to be the deputy director for a nationally recognized program. Absolutely. It was one that was very welcome. The timing of it was perfect. Like I just told you all, I was living in Chicago. You don't know this yet, but my wife is from San Diego. And so the call came in our seventh winter in December with about 18 inches of snow on the ground. And my wife had already told me that she wants me to start thinking about what the next location would be. So the call was very, very welcome to have an opportunity to come down south where the weather's a little bit more mild.
Well, you brought it up already, so I'm going to go back onto it a little bit. Tell me about that first duty station. You know, please tell us, you know, what experience, you know, that you got out of that, the first duty station.
Oh, man. Okay. So the mechanics. When you go through OCS, you are allowed the opportunity to choose your first duty station. And you get to choose based on how well you do in training. I did pretty well, so I had my slate of selection. And the choice came down to either choosing Japan or San Diego. Most people would look at that and say, that's an easy call. You're going to choose San Diego for a host of reasons. But for me, there were a lot of considerations I had. Number one, my father had an opportunity to serve in Japan in the Air Force in the 80s, and he passed on that to be a present father for us. And so he really leaned in hard to say, hey, I think that this is an opportunity you really need to take advantage of. And then two, I recognize that the more difficult assignments are the ones that prepare you for the next leadership opportunity.
Absolutely.
So I recognized that going to Japan was going to be the more difficult opportunity. And I know, I knew then and I know now that it's incumbent upon me to take those tough assignments so that I could sharpen my own leadership tools. And so off to Japan I went. You wouldn't be surprised to know that after the first couple of hours of landing, I'm thinking to myself, what did I do? It was tough, man. It was tough. So I majored. I mean, the reality is I didn't speak the language. I can't read the characters, the language. I was unfamiliar with the cuisine, generally speaking. I've had sushi, but for those of you who have been to Asia, sushi in Japan is far different and superior to the sushi here in the United States. And so, you know, getting adjusted to all of those things. Not to mention the fact that I'd never been on a ship before, with the exception of a 7-day cruise. On those two things can't really compare. So I show up before my favorite holiday, Thanksgiving. We go out to sea for 3 weeks at a time, and just for training to do our thing. And I'll tell you that I vividly remember there were moments where I would video blog to myself questioning, why did I choose this? It was hard for a host of reasons. 6 months later, after that time, I don't know what clicked, but at the end of the day, I just decided I'm going to lean into this discomfort. Sure, I don't speak the language, but that doesn't mean I can't learn how to speak some of the language. Sure, I'm not familiar with the food, but that doesn't mean I can't learn to become familiar with the food. You know, all that was the mindset shift that I had experienced and forced myself to think through after about 6 months of time. And I'll tell you, Japan remains one of the top countries for me to visit, one that I actually am very, very interested in having an opportunity to take my family to one day so they can experience all that that I did as well.
Well, you said a lot of things there, but one of the things I'm going to cap on here, take the tough jobs. I used to tell people, hey, look, nobody wants to do that job. They're having problems. They're putting me in there because I always learned more from that kind of job. And you sort of stand out when you take those jobs, too. If people don't want them, give it to me. I'll take it. In fact, when I went to Korea one time, they said that we got to really have I was an E8 at the time. They said, we have the worst company right here. We're having problems. We're going to get ready to leave the company commander, the first sergeant, everybody. So we probably don't want to put you in there because this is your first job as a first sergeant. And I said, no, I'll take the job. I went in there. I went in there and told the commander, I said, hey, look, I'm going to stop you from getting fired. You're going to stay right here. I'm going to stay with you. And he made it all the way through, and I felt good. 10 years later, I ran into him up in D.C. at a conference, and he was out of the service. He come up to me with his mother and father, and he said, and by then I was a sergeant major. He said, hey, look, he said, this is the guy that saved me from getting fired in the military. So that was really good. Hey, you after 14 years, I guess you was medically separated. Would you share that with the audience?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I didn't plan on that, as most people don't plan on to be medically separated. Uh-uh. I had the full intention of going 20 plus years. That was my desire. Well, as luck would have it, and actually, I'll go all the way into the story. I was doing command PT, and I experienced chest tightness. My commander at the time, I told her this is 6 a.m, and she immediately told me to go to the ER. I did, and I was surprised to learn that I had several blood clots, bilateral in my lungs, a DVT in my legs. There were a lot of blood clotting going on. The reality is, I still don't know why that is. I don't know why that is, but I can say I'm so grateful for the fact that that commander told me to do the right thing because
they did.
And here's the thing, Sergeant Major, like, and you know this because you've led young soldiers and you know that we have this idea that we can survive anything, right? I remember telling the commander, I was like, yeah. I'm fine. I don't need that. I'm good.
That's right.
She looked at me, clear-eyed, and said, that's an order. Go. Yeah. I'm grateful. Anyway, fast forward, I had to report that, as is normal, especially when you're in the reserves, because you need to make sure that everyone knows that you're ready for duty, ready for mobilization. And it was determined that a blood clot scenario is service terminating. So I spent about a year and a half stating my claim that I have talents that can be used elsewhere that don't have to put me in the position of potentially bleeding or, you know, something more catastrophic. But as luck would have it, BUMED had the final call, and I respect that.
I tell people all the time, God has a way of sort of pushing us in different directions. And one door closes, the other door opens. So it's a part of life. And you said it already, since I'm a little bit older guy than you, I went through those doors quite a bit in my life anyway. But one of the things that always bothered me, though, was that transition. How did you transition out of the military? Was it tough for you?
Sergeant Major. I think tough is relative, as you probably can surmise based on what I told you.
Absolutely,
I'm okay with tough. I'm okay with tough. Tough is a good thing for me. Absolutely. I think that, you know, in the struggles are the opportunities. So I'm okay with that. However, it was very difficult. It was difficult because I didn't necessarily understand where I fit in that next rung of in the corporate space or even in the nonprofit space. And it could be a little bit disorienting to separate as an officer in the military, right? You've been serving at that time for me 7 years on active duty. I've always had senior NCOs that will report to me and support me and make sure that I keep my head on straight and I'm able to do the work. I've had sailors that I'd lead. And then you go and you do something and all that goes away. And so that's a very disorienting feeling because now I have to prove myself again in a different context. I think that's part of the reason why I knew that I wanted to choose the nonprofit space. At the end of the day, I know that my engine is driven by mission. If the mission feels like it's resonant for me, I'm going to do the work necessary to make sure that the job is done. And so I'm grateful that while I pounded on all the doors to go into consulting and all the other things that sometimes military officers go into after transition, serendipity would say, or as luck would have it, an organization that was very well suited, mission well suited to who I am and how I think, they needed someone like me, or they were looking for someone like me. So the timing lined up, and I can't say it enough. I think I got lucky.
I got to tell you this story. I was getting ready to get out of the service, and I went up to my wife, and I told the story before. I hadn't told it for a while. And I went up to my wife and said, look, Gloria, you know, I've been married a long time. I said, Gloria, I'm getting ready to retire from the military. I've been in the Army 36 years. I'm going to be a little upset and bothered by all the things that are going on. So I want you to know, don't worry about me, but I'm going to need you to help me. And she didn't skip a beat. She looked me right in the eyes and says, hey, look, I've been in the Army 36 years. I've been running around with you for 36 years. I'm going to be a little frustrated with the things that are going on. So, so she just throws it right back at me about the stress that goes with the spouses and stuff like that. So the big thing about transition, though, is just trying to find out where you fit in. And it sounds like that you did it. You did a really good job. How did that work with the Travis Mannion Foundation lead you to the Bush Institute? I guess you worked for those guys for a while, didn't you?
I did. I was with TMF for 4 years, and I was lucky because as the VLP Presidential Fellowship started, Ryan Mannion, who's the CEO of the Travis Mannion Foundation, she was in the inaugural cohort. And after she'd finished the fellowship, she came back to the staff, and I remember this very, very vividly, how she talked about her experience, and then later down the line, some weeks later, I was encouraged to apply. And that's how I was brought into that space. It was actually through kind of observing Ryan Mannion's experience and kind of seeing who's part of the cohort and the curriculum that's associated. And again, I've been doing the work head down, and I had enough on paper to demonstrate that I was someone worthy of being part of the cohort.
Yeah, I just real clear. I tell you, just talking to you a few times. I guess we've talked a few times. I can tell you're an aggressive guy, and somebody could tell you, "Hey, look, I got to get this fixed." Or you just say, "Get out of the way, I'll get it done." You're a motivated kind of guy, so I appreciate you. I appreciate all you're doing there. Hey,
yes,
we need to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the George W. Bush Institute itself, and we talked about on the prep call the three pillars driving its work and how the financial security ties directly to the veteran mental health. So I know you're a good sailor. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Hey, this is Your Next Mission video podcast with me, your host Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major in the Army. And if you're enjoying the discussion, I know you are, because we're talking about taking care of our veterans and families. Please like us. Click on that subscribe button below. And be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after a word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Their members are the mission. Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at purdueglobal.edu. And USAA.
A century ago, our founders made a promise to always take care of their own. That promise is still at the heart of everything we do and why our members know we'll do what's right. Because at USAA, we take care of our own.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with Duan Welcher, Deputy Director at the George W. Bush Institute. Before we get back to our discussion, I want to let you know about a way to support our work on behalf of our veterans and family here at the American Freedom Foundation. If you have a used vehicle you don't have any, or you're planning on getting rid of, or some property you don't have any plans for, you can donate it. Visit our website at AmericanFreedomFoundation.org/donate and click on that vehicle donation button or that home donation button to support our work. We really would appreciate your support. Sir, would you tell us the history of the George W. Bush Institute and how it fits into the, the Presidential Center?
Yeah, for sure. The first thing I'll say is that, as you mentioned, the Bush Institute, it's important that everyone knows that the Bush Center encompasses several parts. There's the museum, there are the archives, we have tons of public programming, a beautiful public park, and a policy institute, and that's where I work. So when we say the institute, we specifically mean the policy arm of the Bush Center, but oftentimes when we say institute, Bush Center Institute can be interchangeable. The institute is focused on sharing policy solutions to big global and domestic issues, and one of those is the veteran and military families. As you already mentioned, I serve as a deputy director for the Veteran Military's Family Team, and I'm excited to talk about the work that we do. And it's built around three core pillars supporting veteran transition, and that is economic opportunity, education, and health and well-being.
You talk about the wellness as a three-legged stool. Please walk us through that.
Yeah. So when we talk about mental wellness, generally speaking, the conversation always falls to mental health, which is important, which is very important. But over the years of the work that being close to the work here at the Bush Center, what I've learned, especially through our work with the Veteran Wellness Alliance, which is a public-private partnership between 10 clinical providers and 10 peer supporters providing care and access to care across all 50 states. What I've really come to learn is that so wellness is not only about the mental health. VWA helped me understand that other pieces come to that. You guys remember the Surgeon General talked about loneliness as an epidemic. You guys might also know that if you are digging into the suicide data, particularly for veterans, one of the core precipitating or exacerbating effects is financial readiness or financial security. So my thought is, as we talk about wellness, we need to expand what that looks like. We need to make sure that we're talking about it through the lens of financial security, making sure that veterans and their families are enabled to access or enabled to perform at their maximum potential in the economic space. Also making sure that people have access to mental health supports should they need that. Not everyone does need that. Some people need different types of support, but that needs to be provided. And then lastly, making sure that there's community health. So the three-legged stool is mental health, financial health, and community health.
Hey, sir, could you tell us more about the Veteran Wellness Alliance?
Yeah. The Veteran Wellness Alliance actually predates when I came to the Bush Institute, and it's gone through lots of work over the years. The Veteran Wellness Alliance is comprised of 20 organizations. 10 of them are clinical providers. The other 10 are peer connectors. One of the core pieces of work that we do through the Veteran Wellness Alliance is called check-in. For those of you listening, if you want to check out what I'm referencing, you can go to veterancheckin.org. Check-in is essentially the easy button to care to veterans and military families and first responders across the country. We recognize that access to mental health care can be difficult, particularly if you're in rural areas. We also recognize that in certain parts of the country, mental health care or access to that is also stigmatized. And so we're trying to make sure that there are fewer barriers access to care, reducing the barrier to care because of cost, because it is no cost mental health solution to anyone who seeks that care. Reducing the barriers to access, we've actually conducted an outcomes working group that shows and proves that we can provide access to care a bit quicker than what the general public is able to experience. And those things really do tell the story for us at the Veteran Wellness Alliance. I'm really proud of that work.
Yeah. Does a lot of your staff, are they retired military? Is there quite a few military in there? No.
In fact, there are a few. Yes, at the Bush Center, there are military veterans. On the veteran and military families team, I am the only one who served in uniform.
Oh, wow. We need to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to talk about how the Bush Institute keeps veterans engaged as leaders as long after they take that uniform off. So hang in there. We'll be right back. Now, here's a word from one more of the organizations to help make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Quality insurance will set you up for the rest of your life. And I think that's what Blue Cross and Blue Shield has demonstrated for decades.
It adds to your longevity of life because we want to be there for our loved ones. We want to be there for our family.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Dwan Welter, Deputy Director of the George W. Bush Institute. Remember, this is your show. We know there's so many issues that directly affect you. And we want to address each and every one of them. So please, let me know what topics you'd like to cover. You can leave me a message at 844-424-1134. Send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. Sir, please tell us about the Veteran Leadership Program. I guess you went through that yourself, didn't you?
I did. I was in the second cohort. It was an incredible experience. It's a leadership experience that has a very rigorous curriculum, and it mirrors the Presidential Leader Scholars Program that folks might be familiar with. And it requires a personal leadership project that you bring to the table, what you're going to work on, how you're going to advance the transition, and also or the narrative that impacts the veteran community. I'll share with you my particular project was essentially elevating the leadership capacity of the NCO to the corporate world. My idea behind that was simply I, as a commissioned officer, would not be worth my salt as a leader if it would not be for those NCOs that helped me keep my head on straight. And I'll say, Sergeant Major, you said you gave me proof positive earlier in this conversation when you said 20 years later, the guy said, this is the guy that saved me from getting fired. his senior NCO, you. That is exactly the type of commendation and recognition that I think that NCOs deserve, because their leadership capacity is just incredibly untapped. And the proof of that is the fact that if you think that the officer corps is impressive, you must understand that the officer corps runs so well and efficiently because we have that senior NCO corps to support us to do just that.
Well, the thing about it is NCOs, you know, you come up through the ranks, E4, E5, E6, E7, E8, E9, and you go through it. But officers come in, they'll stay 2 years and move out. Stay 2-3 years, move out. Stay 4 years, move out. And every officer I ever work with, to include the chief of staff of the Army, I'd go in and say, hey, look, I can do things you can't do, and I'll keep you informed about everything that's going on. But if you have a problem, tell me what it is early, and I'll help you fix it. I've had a lot of young company commanders and battalion commanders and brigade commanders came to me and said, hey, look, I got a problem, and this is what the problem is. Sergeant Major, can you help me fix it? Yes, sir, I can fix it. We'll get it done. You know, but and also the other thing I tell people is nobody gets anything done by themselves. And when you go in the military, it's like this, the officer corps and the non-commissioned officer corps, they stay right together. And one of the things that you just said a minute ago, years ago, I worked with some guys. In fact, I worked with all the senior enlisted guys from all the services. And we would go to different companies and brief them about the military, the Air Force, the Army, the Air Force, NASA, Space Force. And I'm amazed at what people just don't know. And I wish there was a way in this country to educate people about what those non-commissioned officers and officers bring to the table when you hire them for any organization. So it's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. And I think we're doing a better job, but we need to do a better job, that's for sure.
You know what? And I think as you say that, I think it's important just to say that's why it's important to get people to think about, have a mindset of abundance, because I do think that if people think that there's only enough room to have one leader, then you only elevate one. And as I was going through the process, some of the conversations were thinking about, well, if you elevate that an officer's effectiveness is contingent upon the effectiveness of their NCO, are you undermining the importance of that leader? And the truth is no, not at all.
Absolutely.
Both of those things are true. Both of those individuals can be great. And it talks about, to me, it's the collaborative nature of all of our skill sets that work together.
Yeah. Well, It's all the service, but specifically in the Army and probably any ground fighting forces, you fight together and you have to depend on exactly what that leader knows and what he doesn't know. And my job as an NCO was to make a lieutenant, a captain, a colonel, a general, or whatever, successful in life.
That's right.
A successful leader. And if he doesn't succeed and he's not a good leader, I have failed as an NCO. And I got to say, I feel pretty good because most of the people that I knew rose to the rank of 3 or 4-star general in the Army. So I thought they'd probably never, well, some of them come back and say, thanks a lot, Sergeant Major. And if I see them, they say, thank you. But it's a team sport in the military. Nobody is successful by themselves. But again, I go back and say, I wish this country knew a way to educate this country about the kind of things our military does. And also, before we get off the net here a little bit, I don't know how often you see President Bush, but if you tell him this old soldier said hi to him, thank you for what you're doing. So,
yes, sir.
He's a great guy. I used to go to the White House every once in a while and talk to him and say hi, but I'm sure he probably wouldn't remember me. Hey, this has been a great discussion, and I want to thank you before we get off there for what you're doing and what you continue to do, because I can tell just by talking to you for this 25 or 30 minutes that you care. You care about what you're doing. You care about making a difference in the lives of so many. This is, again, it's been a great discussion. Any final thoughts, something you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, a few things that I'll talk about here. We didn't talk about veterans being civic assets. So you were very, you know, it is important that you talked about, like, we support the mission, we're in uniform. But when we get out, I just want your listeners to understand that responsibility to support and defend the country that we love doesn't stop because you take the uniform off. And also, service does not look like only putting on a uniform. Service can look in so many different ways. And so as much as I'm able to, I really want to get on the foghorn and let people know that you should think about ways to serve your community. Strong communities build strong countries. And so if you feel like, you know, there isn't strength, then you should probably look and see where you can start to, you know, lend your efforts, your time, your expertise to this experiment.
Yeah, I think it's well said. I think a lot of people, a lot of veterans go back, and I think it's focusing on kids and children and young adults. It's mm-hmm. about mentorship and development, about making sure that you know that they are going in the right course. I try to help my grandkids out. I'm not sure they listen to me any, but I try to help them as much as I can. So, hey, look here, thanks for coming on the show. You're a great person, and I've enjoyed it a great deal. And let us know if we can ever help you. We certainly
I would love to.
Absolutely. God bless you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Uh-huh. Thanks again for Dwan Welcher for being with us. I'm Jack F. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and you've been enjoying your Next Mission video podcast. Thank you for joining us. Log on our website at yournextmission.org and check out our job board in partnership with the Recruit Military and Upline, where you can create your own personal profile that will match you with just the right job in real time. You can follow me on all my social media pages, X, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And if you like what we're doing with Your Next Mission, please click on that subscribe button below. And don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications about our upcoming video podcast. Remember, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message at 844-424-1134. Send me an email at smatelly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again for Dwan for joining us today. I would just say that the George Bush Institute, if you've you know, I don't know anybody that talks about it a whole lot, but you ought to talk about it. You ought to be talking to those people that take care of our veterans each and every day. I would say that I met President Bush a long time ago, and I would tell you I've met a lot of presidents in my life, but here's a person that cares so much for our service members, our family members. Here's a person that hired Dwan Welcher to work with him, that cares about us and making changes and make sure we have financial security and mental wellness and all the things that we will. I'd also tell you that don't be afraid to ask for help. All of us struggle out there. All of us have problems sometimes. And all of us think, hey, I don't want to tell anybody about my issues. Well, tell people. Tell people how you feel. Tell people that you want to have a good life. And please, if you need help, just reach out, because I guarantee you reach out to Dwan, you reach out to me, we're going to help you. We're going to do what we can to help you. Thanks for watching, and thanks to Bungalow Studios, and of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, USAA, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision. We appreciate all you do for our military, and as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.